Good morning to you, young Jake. Always a pleasure to see you and stuff.
Well, thanks. That's really nice of you to say. It's a pleasure to see your fine face as well.
So, hey, we got to talk about your soon-to-be wife, by the way, who awkwardly proclaimed you guys were getting married at dinner the other night, but that's fine. Uh-huh. She is a school teacher who is back in the classroom with her kids. And a big part of the show today is going to be, you know, how you deal with coronavirus and whether or not we should be going to football games. But I thought it was interesting that your significant other went back to work and she's got kids in the classroom. How's that been going?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely it's been stressful just from the standpoint of, you know, the kids are in a place where they've been working from home for a while. And, you know, they've been able to get up and do whatever they want, you know, whether that be go get a snack, go to the bathroom, whatever. And now that they're back in the classroom, they aren't able to do that. They literally, it's very, like, regimented, very strict about, like, what they can and can't do. I mean, they can't even get up to sharpen their pencils.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a totally different experience from what, you know, you and I went through in school where, you know, you're messing around in class and you're having a good time and, like, all this stuff. It's not like that anymore. And so, you know, from the perspective of, hey, am I worried about getting corona? I'm not as worried about it as I thought I would be just because I know for a fact that the way they have it set up, the kids themselves are socially distant and the kids are required to wear masks. It's not optional in the classroom. And then I know that my girlfriend is also taking it extremely seriously. So yeah, there is risk. I'm not saying there's no risk, but what I am saying is that they're doing everything that they can do to make it as safe as possible.
Yeah, I don't know if I would be that confident. And you're quite confident. I agree that you this entire time have exuded awesomeness and male libido about libido is not the right word there, but whatever. We all like, you know, congregation of body parts. Anyway, the point is this got awkward now. You've always been very confident that things would be okay. I am not as confident as you. And if you think you're dragging your ass over here this weekend to watch my NFL Sunday ticket, you would probably be right. But the point is if I'm you, I'm nervous about it. Like, it is just, you know that from the jump, classrooms, high schools, middle schools, grade schools, whatever, they're petri dishes for every bad bacteria that has ever been known to man. And I don't see why coronavirus would be separate.
Well, it's not. I mean, it's not separate or different or special. You know, like, it's not that what you just said is 100% true. Like, young kids are particularly foul individuals, as we all were at that age. You know, for her, she teaches sixth grade, I believe. So the kids are not like 5-year-olds. They are older, which, I mean, on some level helps, but on another level doesn't.
Bro, college football players won't stop going to parties. And you think sixth graders are going to be like, oh, yeah, we're not within 6 feet of each other. We got to back up.
It's not that. I just think that sixth graders, when they're that young still, they have the sense of fear still, you know. They're like, oh, this is that, like, their parents are telling them it's scary. You know, think about it. When you're going into school and you have to be socially distant, like, you've got all these things going on that the school is mandating to you, there's an inherent fear there, an inherent seriousness that gets instilled into the student. So,
hey, man, I hope you're right. I guess where we'll leave this is, I think being a teacher is absolutely punishment in
life.
It is. I think, yeah, they're underpaid. They're underappreciated. Nobody ever thinks about our educators in this country. They simply send their kid to school so they don't have to deal with them. And I cannot tell you how many parents I know personally that are like, they need to reopen these schools. I can't do this anymore. Well, guess what? Stop popping kids out of your vagina if you don't want to do this anymore. Right? Like, that's my opinion on it. If you don't want to be a parent, don't have sex. Or, I don't know, throw on a Jimmy hat and use a prophylactic. It's not rocket science. Right? It totally isn't. Good morning, Eric in Raleigh. Says, no one is safe. Are kids rolling up in pajamas? It only takes one parent not caring about their kid. Just, yeah, exactly right. Thank you. It takes one degenerate parent who's like, oh, I have to get to the office. Or I want my time. I love, you know, I was talking to one friend of mine over the weekend, and they were like, I want my me time back. Well, you know what? Then you shouldn't have banged Larry. I mean, that it really is. You don't get me time as a parent. You don't. I currently live with my wife alone in my house for the first time in 20 years because I'm a parent. That comes along with the job. Right? Like, no offense to you, Jake. I don't miss you one bit living in my house. And don't think that your room's still available to come back to.
Well, anyway, at least we can still watch football together.
I actually do miss you. It's weird. It's weird not having you living, in the house. It's quite awkward for the first time ever in your young, burgeoning adulthood.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely different. I mean, let's be honest, the worst part about it is we have to do the podcast in this crappy format now. So, you know, that's the worst part.
Yeah, yesterday you may have noticed we did not have an audio version of the podcast because GarageBand is terrible. But anyway, the point is, we're figuring it out. We're figuring it out. Steven Surprise says, why don't you just move back in, Jake? Bring your girlfriend with, and Monty can stop talking about Mormon shows. By the way, and I will just say right off the jump, I watched My Five Wives on Amazon Prime, uh-huh, which is a polygamy, uh-huh, show, and it ended last night. We finally got through it. All night long, I dreamed that I was living with missionaries, and like the main part of the dream was I couldn't shower in private because there were like five guys in my bathroom. And it's like, hey, man, not to get too far off the rails here, but can I just say I have no idea how I would please five wives, like not the actual procreatorial portion of the program. Like, I got no problem. You want me to put seed in the garden? Just show me where it is. I'm good. Well, no, I can probably find it on my own. Anyways, that's not really what I meant. The point is, I don't know how you keep five women happy at the same time, because if it was just the physical part of it, okay, you can knock that out. No problem.
Literally.
Right?
Literally.
Yeah. You literally, hey, man, A plus B equals baby, right? Like, you get that part. But the part that's impossible is, oh, what do you want for dinner? Oh, hey, it's my night. Okay, let's do two nights in a row instead of one. Oh, everybody's happy. And then, like, you have 24 kids, and crazy wife number three's like, oh, hey, I want another kid. It's like, dude, we got 24 kids running around here. Do we really need 25? Might as well go for a quarter.
Oh,
right?
My God.
By the way, you know how much money it costs to feed, what would that be, 24 kids, 29 people on a daily basis? My God. Okay, there's your public service announcement, by the way. Barry changed his name. Brooklyn Barry.
Wow.
Brooklyn Barry says sex is a critical part of any relationship. It is. I don't disagree with that.
Hey, look, I completely agree, and so does that crazy-ass show you're watching.
Well, it's over now. I'm not watching anymore. The episodes are done. Good, Lexi's on the show today. She says, Timbo, what's up?
Timbo.
I work with Lexi. She calls me Timbo every day.
Is that a spinoff from Kimbo Slice? Is that why she calls you Timbo?
I could be Timbo Slice, I guess. Who knows? But anyway, the point is, I could never do like plural marriage. Never going to happen. That's the official term for like polygamy. So you don't call it polygamy. It's called plural marriage.
Well,
I couldn't do it. Like, what's your limit? How many, like, two wives, three wives? I think maybe two.
You know what, though? Like, from a life perspective, I two would probably be the top. But I feel like our threshold for drama is so low that even having two would be tough. You know, I mean, there's so many other things we want to spend our time on rather than arguing about things that, you know, having like 10 wives is hard.
Well, we have very little drama in our lives. Well, I have very little drama in my life. You're 17, or 27 going on 17, uh-huh, and you've got the puppy and you've got this new burgeoning relationship and your soon-to-be wife who's... Okay, was it not awkward that she made several engagement jokes?
No, I...
Not awkward in the least?
Yeah, it is what it is. What do you want me to say?
Are you ring shopping?
No, not yet.
Have you guys talked about what kind of ring she wants?
No.
Yes,
no,
you have.
No, we have not.
You've never talked about that?
No.
How many carrots is she after?
I don't know, because we haven't talked about it.
Okay. So she's not looking to go Kardashian style on the ring?
I know of, no.
My guess is within a year you guys will be married. That's just my guess. All right, speaking of which, within a year. Will we have normal sports in this country within a year? I think that is a much more difficult question to answer than it's ever been. Yesterday it was announced by BYU that they will have no fans this coming weekend versus Troy or next weekend versus La Tech. Notre Dame Wake Forest was postponed after multiple positive coronavirus tests at Notre Dame. And my question is, and kind of similar to what we were talking about with your girlfriend being a school teacher, can you expect college campuses not to have coronavirus? Because I'm telling you, I don't think you can. I am not at all surprised that Notre Dame was postponed. Obviously, BYU and Army was postponed. We saw that. I think it is asking too much to say to 20-something, you know, kids, you know, 18 to 22-year-olds, hey, you got to stay in your dorm room and not hang out with your friends. I just think, Jake, that's being unrealistic.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is being unrealistic. You know, I mean, who are we kidding, right? But I think at the same time, you know, we're not asking the entire campus to do that, right? You're asking, you're essentially adding a layer of responsibility onto your football program. And so, you know, I think it should be, as unfortunate as it is, I think in sports programs, whether it's basketball, football, or otherwise, I think, you know, if you break that rule, if you go out and you're chilling with the homies and you get corona, you shouldn't be allowed to come back. You should have to go through protocol just like they do in the league, and you should have to go through all that. The entire program shouldn't pay the price because you couldn't stay in your room, you know?
Yeah, but the problem is the spread is so rampant that I don't think you could do it that way. I mean, if you think about, you know, the successes of the NBA bubble, the successes of the baseball bubble, what more likely in baseball, or more to the point in baseball, what were the failures of the baseball bubble? Well, the baseball bubble failed when people went to a casino in St. Louis. Their families came into town. They all went out and partied like there was no coronavirus. And guess what? Half the team got coronavirus. And so it's that kind of mentality that really worries me. And the interesting issue is that you're not going to have fans at college football games, which I'm totally on board with. Frankly, I don't think you need fans at these games right now. It's almost irresponsible to have fans at these games. But my point is, there's no reason you can't play that game, right? We've seen it in the NFL. I think there's going to be more injuries. I don't have any question about that. But I think in college, you can play these games. I just don't know why there is this push to have fans going to games right now. Frankly, it's better for business on the TV side if fans don't go to games, because the only thing they can do is watch on TV, right? And I know that around the country, there are still most people are tailgating, and you're still seeing a lot of that at college campuses. I'm all for that as long as you're not spreading coronavirus. But I thought the interesting thing with BYU and their you know, ban on fans, if you will, they also announced in Utah County, which is where BYU is housed, they're in Provo, Utah County, that there is now a mask mandate in place in Utah County. And people were more pissed that they wouldn't let him go to the BYU game than that they were going to have a mask mandate. That's how much football, college football, matters in certain corners of this country. And frankly, I'm not surprised by it at all.
Well, having lived in Utah, that sounds extremely on brand for the state. You know, we went there, we visited, a month ago now? And everybody was wearing a mask. I mean, I can't tell you how different the experience was in Utah compared to Arizona. I mean, everybody had a mask on. That makes perfect sense. And by the way, that's why you see that Utah has had much, much fewer cases in the big picture than Arizona, for instance, or another, whatever other state you want to look at. So, yeah.
Well, and unfortunately, Arizona and Utah are amongst a large cluster of states that are trending in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And that's what precipitated the, oh, wow, Gail Sayers, the legendary Chicago Bear, has died.
That's sad.
Oh, that's a bummer. He was a, Gail Sayers was absolutely, and well, I guess, that's too bad. That's, see, like, and we were just talking about this behind the scenes.
In the pre-show meeting.
Yeah, in the pre-show meeting this morning, we were talking about the fact that Animal, the wrestler Animal from Road Warriors, died. And the Road Warriors were one of my favorite, you know, wrestling names back in the 80s. And I said, you know, like, all of my childhood wrestling icons are dying, right? And now it I don't know that I feel old, I guess. Like, good God, man. So many athletes from my childhood are dead. Like, Gail Sayers and Walter Payton were two Chicago icons. I mean, to think that Gail Sayers is that sucks.
Yep.
That's a real bummer that he passed away. But here nor there. I digress back to BYU and canceling college football games. My point is, I think you can play the games without fans. And I think if we would just control ourselves. Are you on board with a mask mandate, by the way?
Do you believe in that? In my opinion, we should have a national mask mandate. I don't think it's a suppression of rights. I don't think it's like some travesty against our rights at all. I think it's a public safety step. You know, I think I can't explain why people politicize masks and they think that it's some sort of like, you know, suppression of our democracy. I more view it as, hey, there's a pandemic going around. Science has clearly shown that wearing a mask tremendously cuts the spread. So why would we not all just throw a mask on and live our lives? Because that's essentially what we've done, if you think about it. If you wear a mask, you can feel a lot more comfortable going out, you know?
Well, and I think now the science has changed a little bit as well, because we know that you know, coronavirus doesn't just live on surfaces, or, you know, doesn't travel 6 feet and die. We know that it's much like dust in the air, that it can travel exponentially further than we know, and that it stays in the air because it is essentially weightless. So it floats around rooms. And so one of the things people talked about was the gym. One of the reasons the gym is such a contagion is because, you know, people are breathing harder, and you can wear masks all you want, but walking through that gym, just because, you know, you're done working out doesn't mean that your exposure level is lessened. I think we know restaurants, all that kind of stuff. This is what I say about football games. If you're going to go to a football game and you're going to yell and scream, you're going to give somebody coronavirus. Very simply.
Yep.
Or you're going to catch it. And so I just don't, it's just not worth the risk. By the way, interesting stat put out by our good friend Mitch Harper at KSL in Salt Lake, where he says, BYU is favored by 14 points this weekend over Troy. They're 105-3. 105 wins versus 3 losses when they are favored by 14 points or more. I think they're going to be fine this weekend. My guess is BYU is going to win handily.
Yeah, I mean, this should be a nice game for them. If we're being honest, I don't think it's even a challenge for BYU, really. I mean,
no.
You know, it's just a game. It's just a game to play.
It's a game they need to play. Yeah, frankly. I mean, I wonder if BYU and Utah wind up playing this year.
I think there's still a possibility. I do. I think there's a possibility, but look, the Pac-12 needs to get it going. I mean, you know, if they're gonna seriously, you know, want to be in the middle of this thing come playoff time, they really got to get on the field. And you know, this may be one of the only things that me and Donnie actually agree on, which is, hey, all the other conferences are playing. Why isn't the Pac-12 playing? You know,
Donnie.
Yeah. So you know, it just is.
Yeah, I think they've been very quiet since we got the news last week that they were considering playing.
Yeah.
Pac-12's been very quiet, and you know, hopefully we get something tomorrow, I think is last I heard, but I think we're going to see kickoff in the Pac-12 on Halloween. That'd be my guess, is we're going to see it the week of Halloween.
Yeah.
And I do think that BYU and Utah should play. If there are football games in the Pac-12, I think BYU and Utah should play. And I still maintain BYU belongs in the Pac-12. But that's a different conversation for a different show. But my point is, I do think, you know, look, I think everything that Arizona State has done, the job that Herm has done to build that program and recruit talent, I look at the separation of classes in this league, and it's always, in my opinion, until something dramatically shifts, it's always going to be the Oregons. It's always going to be the Washington, the Utah, the USC. And a dramatic shift like Herm Edwards completely changing the game at ASU,
but look,
that puts ASU into the top half of the conference.
I don't know why we keep throwing USC into the picture. They haven't done anything in the last several years. I mean, they've been a mediocre team. The only reason, in my opinion, that they get any kind of run is because they're in Southern California and they have a nice brand with some serious history behind it.
And they recruit the hell out of that program.
Well, they may recruit the hell
out
of the program.
USC always has a ton of talent.
That might be true, but they never win. That when's the last time they won anything, right?
I think you have to remember a couple of things. One, they came out of some pretty heavy sanctions in the Pete Carroll era. They had some really, really bad management, over the last several years. But now I think you're seeing that they're moving in the right direction. You know, they hired a fabulous new athletic director. I'm a little surprised Clay Helton's still the head coach at USC. But overall, my point is USC is always going to be a threat. Every game USC plays, they can win. And that's a legacy program that kids want to play at. And I certainly think that before too long, we're going to be having, you know, USC is going to be back in the national championship conversation. It's simply a matter of when, not if. And frankly, they challenge for the Pac-12 South every year, which puts them in that conversation. Now, ASU and Utah certainly have changed the narrative there. But I think that the Pac-12 South is USC's, division until it's not. Until somebody proves that they're better than USC, it's USC's division. But my main point is, if there's football in the Pac-12, I really, really hope that we get to see BYU and Utah. I am thrilled that the Nuggets finally won a game last night. They knock off the Lakers 114-106. And boy, did we see the ugly narrative on the Lakers play itself out in this game. Maybe it is true. And I with Anthony Davis, I had kind of thought this went away. But if the Lakers don't knock down their threes, that team's not winning anything. And they lose again 114-106. The Lakers shot 23% from three last night. Jake, is it all or nothing from three for the Lakers?
No, I don't think it's all or nothing. I think, yeah, they are a team that needs to knock down threes to really be in a game. But I think last night we didn't get, we just didn't get the same performances that we got in game two. I look at, like, LeBron tried to get it going in the second half. He made a couple of nice shots over Jeremy Grant, but then we didn't really see much of him. I look at Anthony Davis, and I don't know what happened to the Anthony Davis that was, getting Nikola Jokic into bad situations and racking up fouls. Where did that go?
Well, he did have 9 straight points at one point in the second
quarter.
Right.
I'm not saying he didn't have.
With LeBron on the bench.
Look, I'm not saying he didn't have stretches where he dominated. What I'm saying is they didn't do what they needed to do to put the Nuggets in a bad position, which is get them in foul trouble and get to their bench. That's what you need to do.
Well, this is the double-edged sword, though, on Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard comes in, frustrates Jokic a little bit, picks up 4 fouls, Dwight Howard did, but the Nuggets are effectively running pick and roll, and the Lakers are not effectively defending
right.
that. And it creates an issue for the Lakers where you wind up with Jokic being guarded by, at one point it was Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And, you're just not – that's not going to go well for you. And until the Lakers figure out that quotient in how to defend the pick and roll properly, I don't think they ever had a chance to win this game last night. But – please don't hit the panic button on the Lakers. It's one game. They showed last night for a long stretch in the third quarter and part of the fourth quarter that they are the superior team. And when LeBron James and Anthony Davis are in lockstep, which they never were last night, the Lakers are the best team in the NBA. And I don't care who comes out of the East, and I don't care what Denver runs out there. Nikola Jokic likely will not have another double-double in this series. And if that's the case, the Lakers win. I look at some of the numbers out of this game last night. the Nuggets out-rebounded the Lakers 53-34.
That's the worst part.
Which I don't understand. Yeah, I don't understand how that's possible when you're looking at the fact that the Lakers are, I mean, size dominant in this series. And then, again, the ugly free throw shooting reared its head. 64% from the line for the Lakers last night. If they're going to shoot 23% from three and 64 from the line, they're not going to win. They're simply not. And again, I will continue to say it's guys like Alex Caruso. It's Rajon Rondo shooting bricks out of the corner. It's guys like that that have to knock their threes down for this team to win, because that gives Anthony Davis much more space to operate. And it creates frustration amongst the Nuggets that frankly, I don't think we saw at any point last night.
And, you know, the other thing, too, that should be noted in this game is the Nuggets got a great performance out of a young player called Monte Morris. And, you know, he had a nice little game. I don't know what he finished with. I think he was around 17 to 20 points last night, a couple assists. But, you know, he had a big game for them. And so I look at, hey, they didn't get that performance in game one or two, right? They didn't have him going off for 17 to 20. And what did they lose by? Like 13 points. So, you know, really Morris, you know, ends up that performance off the bench ends up kind of propelling the Nuggets forward. But overall, I just think the Lakers didn't play a good game. You know, you look at the rebounding, they didn't rebound well. You look at the defense, they didn't play pick and roll defense well. And then they didn't make their shots. So all that combined to me says, no, it's not time to hit the panic button. They're well in control of this series still. I think if they lose the next game, now we're in trouble.
Game four is absolutely a must win.
I mean, if you lose game four, you're giving the Nuggets a lot of hope. And now all of a sudden we're back to 0-0 in a best of three. And that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely right. So I more tend to lean this was a one-gamer. When you're down, you know, 20 points in the first half, you're never going to be able to, or whatever it was, 16, 18 points, you're never going to be able to overcome that, in my opinion, in a playoff game, because it takes you so much effort and energy, twice the effort and energy it takes for the Nuggets, that you get to the end of the fourth quarter and you're out of gas. And I think that's very clearly what we saw. Out of the Lakers, the Nuggets were able to withstand that push. The Lakers, I think, had it down to two, and the Nuggets pulled away. Because when you're the Lakers and you're like, ooh, all right, we got this down to 2 points, you kind of relax a little bit. And that's when the Nuggets were able to take advantage of it. But it is what it is. I think it is one of these things where Lakers are the by far the better team. There's no doubt in my mind about that. All right, let's run through some NFL headlines for you. I think the biggest story in the NFL right now is this conversation around Drew Brees and whether or not Drew Brees is over the hill. A lot of people looking at the performance against the Raiders the other night, wondering if Drew Brees is a 40-year-old quarterback who's 1 year too long into the NFL. I'm not ready to pronounce him dead on arrival every Sunday. I think it's a little premature. I think without Michael Thomas, you know, again, two of their best weapons not in that game, I think Drew Brees or any quarterback is going to struggle. Who's the best quarterback in the NFL? Mitchell Trubisky. If you take Allen Robinson, I said Mitchell Trubisky's. Anyway, you know, if you take the best wide receiver off of any team, that quarterback's going to struggle. So, Jake, I'm not out on Drew Brees on any level.
No, I'm not out on Drew Brees. I do think there's a couple of factors, though. Like, there's no question that his arm is not as strong as it used to be, but that comes with age, right? Like, we see that with a lot of quarterbacks where their arm talent goes away a little bit, but that's not preventing him from performing at a high level. The thing with the Saints has always been that if they're at the Superdome, they're going to dominate you. It is what it is. They're going to light it up. The offense is going to be in step. Like, everything's going to be great. You know, when they're on grass and they're playing outside or on a natural surface, they're not nearly as good. And so when I look at, you know, playing versus the Raiders in their new stadium, I kind of felt
on grass.
Yeah. Like I picked the Saints to win the game because I felt like, hey, you know, it's indoor technically, you know, but you still have that more of a natural playing surface. So I don't know. I'm not ready to sit here and say Drew Brees has lost it and he should have retired and all that junk. Like, I don't think we're there. I just simply think that, again, as we talked about yesterday, it was week two. He's an older guy. He was definitely feeling the effects of week one. And I would hope that in week three, he bounces back with a bigger performance.
Yeah, speaking of Allen Robinson, Allen says, why are you still jock riding Trubisky? He blows. I'm not jock riding Trubisky. I think that Trubisky, there's a couple of truths about Mitchell Trubisky, okay, the quarterback of the Chicago Bears. Number one, it was a disaster to pass on Patrick Mahomes to get Mitchell Trubisky. I think we all recognize that. Two, I think the Bears have not put him in the best position to succeed. 2 years in a row without a preseason is a huge problem for a quarterback you're trying to develop, because I think a lot of us understand you don't really get the development time during the season. Your growth as a quarterback is in the summer and in the preseason. So I think that's something that's not really talked about a lot. But I also think I look at Trubisky, and the one thing that is very clear is the Chicago Bear locker room is on Mitchell Trubisky's side. That team likes and plays hard for Mitchell Trubisky. And when you went and got a guy like Nick Foles, with all due respect to Foles and what he's done, you're going to struggle, in my opinion, to make that kind of quarterback change when Mitchell Trubisky's making the throw that we saw him make in Detroit to win the game. When you are making throws that we saw this past week all over the field, and you have a guy like Allen Robinson letting the ball hit him in the chest, and that ball winds up getting intercepted against a crappy football team like the Giants. You look at the fact that Miller had two drops, one a touchdown, one a critical first down on the sideline on balls that went right through his hands. That's not Mitchell Trubisky's fault. And the reason that that is so critical is because on film, the Bears, when they're watching game film, see that that's not Mitchell Trubisky's fault. So the offensive line sees that's not Trubisky's fault. Miller and Robinson and, you know, that wide receiver tight end group sees that that's not Mitchell Trubisky's fault. That team plays hard for Trubisky, and I don't think that you can undervalue.
Yeah,
that.
No, I agree. I think, you know, to whoever the person's, whoever the tweeter's point was, that I don't think he blows. I certainly don't think he's the best quarterback in the league, but I definitely think he's good enough to take you where you want to go. I just think that you need a well-rounded team. He's not a good enough quarterback where you can say, all right, here's Trubisky and here's a crap offense, go ahead and run it. You know, that's just not who he is.
I would certainly agree with that. I think it is, without question, Mitchell Trubisky is not the best player on a Super Bowl team. Not right now. Maybe he turns into that, but right now that's not who the Mitch is. Maserati Mitch is not a guy that's going to be able to take you to a Super Bowl. John Gruden and Sean Payton both fined $100,000. The Saints and the Raiders each fined $250,000 as an organization. Well over $1 million in fines this past week now because coaches were not wearing a mask full-time on the sideline on Sunday and Monday Night Football. I don't see why this is so controversial. This was something that blew up yesterday. A lot of people were talking about this, and I don't understand where the controversy comes from. It makes complete sense to me that the National Football League, which is a multi-billion dollar machine, every year they make billions and billions of dollars. Why would they not take steps to protect that product? Whether it's no fans, face masks on personnel that's on the sideline, this makes total sense. Coaches were told it's mandatory. They broke that rule. Jake, I don't think this is controversial at all.
Yeah, I just don't understand what is not to understand. You have to wear a mask. It's simple as that. Your employer is telling you have to wear a mask, so go ahead and wear a mask. It's not rocket science. Like, I think the only reason this is controversial is because it's not a $50,000 fine. You know, it's $100,250. So they're heavier fines, and I think the NFL is sending a message. What I will say is it's funny how the NFL sends a message on things that cost it money, but it won't send a message on other topics that are related to the league. So,
well, I don't disagree with that either. I mean, I think when we're talking about this, and it's interesting, Stever, who is our special forces dude.
Black Ops.
He sent me a DM on Twitter basically saying that masks are mandatory in large parts of the military. And that, you know, when they travel on ships and you know, airborne vehicles, they have to wear them. And it just makes sense. It doesn't matter if you're in the military or if you're an NFL head coach. And this is, I guess this is a larger, do mask mandates infringe on your rights? I think there's probably 30% of people who believe that, Jake.
Well, I just don't understand where they get it from. How does it infringe on your right at all? I know one of the common theories as well, once you start having people wear masks, now all of a sudden they go to a next step, and it's just a first step to taking over the world. And it's like, dude, you're reaching so far with that. Like, literally all it is, hey, put a mask on so we can cut the spread of this virus. You know, put a mask on so you don't have to risk your life going to the grocery store. You know, put a mask on so you don't have to worry about Grandma Edna getting sick from coronavirus. You know, like...
I'm sorry, Grandma Edna?
Yeah, Edna. Uh-huh, that's the name I went with today. You like that?
Okay, yeah, you know, Edna's up there as old people name. Uh-huh. You know, what's another... Gertrude? Bernice? you know... Anyway, point is, I don't think mask mandates infringe on your right, because wearing a mask is not about you. It's about the people around you. And I think it makes a heck of a lot of sense. And again, in the NFL, I have no problem with it. All right. Can we talk about sex on airplanes, please?
Yeah. Sure.
Let's talk about the Epstein Express. For those of you who don't know, Jeffrey Epstein, the noted global gallivanting pedophile, who was
don't do it.
It upsets Jake. How do I say this gently? Jeffrey Epstein whacked himself in prison and then he killed himself as
No, he whacked himself and then he got whacked.
That's probably true. But here and there, Jeffrey Epstein, who committed suicide in jail, or if you're Jake, you believe he was murdered by QAnon. The point is, Jeffrey Epstein had a plane, the Lolita Express, I believe is what it was called, where he would fly young women in the plane with high priced, high class millionaire celebrities. And it is alleged that on that plane, underage girls would have sex with famous people, and that plane would then take them to Jeffrey Epstein's private island, where more sex with underage people would happen. Well, the names that have flown on that plane have for a long time been secret because not all of the flight logs were released. Well, now the U.S. Virgin Islands has been seeking those flight logs for over a decade, and now it looks like they're going to get them and they're going to release them in the coming weeks. One name we know already is Bill Clinton. And we got an update on the former president of the United States this week when it came out that he, in fact, did fly and have sex with a woman on Jeffrey Epstein's plane and on his private island. The woman just turns out to be Ghislaine Maxwell, the madam for Jeffrey Epstein. And everybody was looking to see if Bill Clinton was a pedophile. And, well, it turns out Bill Clinton likes fully grown, blossoming adult women. Because it was Ghislaine Maxwell that Bill Clinton had sex with. Any surprise that it turns out Dirty Bill is not a pedophile, Jake?
No, not at all. I think that was never his MO. You know, that was never who he was. You know, he didn't cheat on Hillary with some 15-year-old, right? Like he didn't. So my point.
No, he stained Monica Lewinsky's dress while she was fully legal and working in the White House.
That's what I'm telling you. So that's why it doesn't surprise me. You know, I think maybe I'm wrong here, but you got to be pretty sick to be a pedophile, you know, and Bill Clinton doesn't seem like.
You're not wrong, by the way.
He doesn't seem like the kind of guy who. My point here is that you can't be that sick and still go out and win the presidency and still do all of that and be in the public eye. And
I don't know if you noticed who's in the White House right
now.
Yeah,
but I don't know, dude. I just
Donald Trump has very close ties to Jeffrey Epstein. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are guys that were, you know, New York elites. They rolled together. They were very close friends. You know, there's a lot of people who think Donald Trump's name is going to be on that flight manifest, or at least one time. Like, do you want to know the names
yes.
who flew on Epstein's
yes.
jet? I desperately
I
do.
And we should know them. They should be held accountable.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. Eric makes a great point in Raleigh. He says you have to be sick just to seek the presidency. What did Barry say? Barry's going off about... Barry says, look, I don't condone pedophilia, but we're a decade past anybody flying on that plane. Are we really looking to get out pitchforks for guys who may have committed a crime that cannot be proven 10 years later? That's not that bad of a... I mean... Yes, I am.
It's not a,
if
look,
you're associated with Jeffrey Epstein and you flew on his plane, you were probably looking for an underage.
Listen,
group.
it's not about taking them to court and getting them in trouble. It's about punishing their public image. It's about making them pay the price in the public eye for what they did all those years ago. Because we all know damn well that they're not going to go to jail and get punished for this. So it's not about the legal side of it.
Yeah.
It's about ruining their image and making them be held accountable for the choices that they made, man. Like again, I feel like we always get to this point on this show, whether we're talking Donnie, you know, Epstein getting murdered in his jail cell, anything, right? Like, it's you make choices, and then these people, these elites, right? The Epsteins, the Trumps, like Bill Clinton, they don't want to be held accountable for what they did. Yet the average working Joe gets held accountable for every little thing. And that's the point of this. That is the point.
Oh, I want to know. I want to know. If you were on his plane, you made a horrendous life choice, and somebody paid a price for that. And in my opinion, if you were on that plane, you should absolutely be outed. There is no doubt about that. I don't know how you spin that. If you're Prince Andrew, you know what? The evidence, in my opinion, says Prince Andrew has an addiction to younger women based on all the evidence, right? Like, he's essentially been expelled from the royal family without being expelled. I just don't, there's no spinning that. There's no excuse making that covers for flying on Jeffrey Epstein's private plane and going to his island. Like, there's no way, shape, or form that somebody like Ghislaine Maxwell deserves, you know, an easy bit in prison. She provided, allegedly, Jeffrey Epstein with underage women to hobnob around the world and have sex
yeah.
with. That's a felony. You should never see the light of day again.
Yeah.
And I don't feel sorry for you. You know, anyway, I could rail on about that. I could absolutely rail on that. Before we get out of here today, I have to ask about vaccines, because now it is looking more and more and more likely that we will not have a vaccine before Election Day. And it is looking more and more likely that, based on what Americans, you know, who were asked in major polls say, that most Americans will not take the vaccine that first comes to the market in a rush. Jake, will you take the first vaccine on the market?
Well, it could be the first vaccine or the 10th vaccine. I mean, there's a criteria that you need to see to be able to trust it, right? Like, you need to see, hey, that it actually works, number one, right? Number two, I need to see that it works in large form. So, for example, Johnson & Johnson is one of the folks who are making a vaccine, and they just went to testing on 60,000 volunteers. So if it works on 60,000 people, and there's only a couple that have like side effects and issues, okay, that's a nice start. You know, now I need to see it on, you know, 500,000 people. I need a bigger test pool. I need to see, hey, it's actually working, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, if the first one comes out 6 months from now and it's extremely tested and it's, you know, it's like proven without a shadow of a doubt that it actually works, then yeah, I would consider it. But I'm not going to be somebody taking a vaccine that is being put out because Donnie wanted to get reelected, you know, so.
Well, and I think that's part of the question, though. What do you do if you're a Trump supporter? Because he's, you know, how many, you can line them up by the thousands. How many Trump supporters have not worn a mask and then gotten coronavirus, and many have died from that, right? Like, so the thing that I struggle with is, if Donald Trump says, hey, this vaccine is safe, I'm taking it, how many people are going to go and take it? And what if it's not safe? yeah, sure, you can go and sue the drug maker. Well, that's all well and good, but if you're harmed by it or damaged by it, or if it doesn't protect you and you get coronavirus, to me, I just think you don't want to be the first guy.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is like buying the new iPhone. You don't want to be the first phase of the new iPhone. Do yourself a favor and wait and be the second phase of this vaccine.
Yeah.
Because whatever comes out in November or December or January or whenever this happens, I think you just got to wait and see how many people's heads fall off from taking this vaccine,
yeah.
Right? How many people, become, impotent because they took this vaccine? Like, I'm just not willing to take the risk, and I'm probably naive about it. I'm not willing to take the risk.
I don't think you're naive. I think, again, it's just a process, right? Like, it's not about first or last or, like, the position of the whatever vaccine comes out. It's about science and data. So, is it tested on millions of people and 98% of them are successful and they're good? Then yeah, I'll take the vaccine. Like, it works. It's proven. But is it tested on 60,000 people and 90% of them it worked and 10% it didn't? I'm probably not taking that vaccine yet, So the other side too is, like, I'm comfortable with how I'm living right now. Like, I've gotten used to, hey, you just got to wear a mask when you go out. You can literally, if you think about it, you can essentially do everything you want to do outside of events, if you just wear a mask. You can go.
I don't think masks are foolproof. I don't think a mask prevents you from getting coronavirus. I think it dramatically reduces your chances.
I think if you're wearing a mask, you got to work your ass off to get the virus. I think you got to put yourself in a position to be standing next to somebody who has it. We went to Mastro's over the weekend. Walking through that restaurant, I was thinking about coronavirus, but I had a mask on. My mouth, my nose, everything was covered, and I was not breathing as I walked through there. So I feel confident that I didn't get coronavirus walking through Mastro's, but I think about people who are in there not wearing a mask. Yeah, they probably got the virus that night. And God forbid the people who actually work at Mastro's, I would not be in that position. I can tell you that right now.
No, it is wildly uncomfortable. And I just, that's why the narrative coming from the White House is a real problem. Because again, and I know I said this on the show yesterday, for those of you who watched yesterday, but what difference would it make if Donald Trump, in all of these ridiculous campaign rallies where he's mocking, John McCain and his wife, and, what difference would it make if he were wearing a mask and throwing masks out into the crowd? If he branded, Trump Pence 2020 for more years.
Just make America great again.
Yeah, and, MAGA, make America great again. If you put that on masks and throws it out to everybody who comes to his rally, what a difference that messaging and that narrative would make in this country. And we just passed 200,000 deaths yesterday, and it just seems like he just doesn't care. He continues to say, oh, we're on the home stretch of the coronavirus. We're on the home stretch. Bro, we're not on the home stretch. There is a very, very significant flare-up happening in this country right now, and that's why I'm just not leaving the house, dude. It's part of the shittiest part of selling our house is that strangers come into our house, and it's incredibly unnerving. I think about it every time. Like that, the last showing we had the other day, there was they had their kid with them. And as I said, small children are petri dishes. And that kid's just running around touching everything he can get his grubby little hands on. Anyway, my point is, there's not a whole lot I feel safe doing. I would not go to college football games. I totally regret going to Mastro's the other night. Thankfully, what are we, 5 days past that now? Sunday, Monday, this our fourth day past that. And I haven't melted down and begin vomiting out of my earlobes yet. So hopefully I haven't gotten coronavirus, but
all right.
Jake, another average performance by
you. Thank
you.
Way
to go.
I tried to do my best Trubisky today, so thank you.
Well, we have picks. We should probably give out our Thursday night pick.
A scintillating matchup on Thursday night football. Who wouldn't want to talk about Jags and Dolphins?
Well, I'm leading both of my football pick'ems. I shouldn't say that. I'm leading the family pool. I'm tied in the a-hole friends group of former coworkers. But I had a pretty good week last week. I had 14 picks. I had 12 the first week. My feeling is that I'm going to take the Jags, I think. This is in Jacksonville. I'm going to take the Jags.
It's Minshew mania. Come on. Come on.
Well, he's going against Fitzmagic. So don't the two balance each other out? I would think
yeah,
they do.
I'll go with the Jags in a low-scoring game. 21-17. That's what I would go with.
All right, I'll go 28-24 Jags.
There you go.
There you have it. Until Friday morning, say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.